Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
I'm Chase Ralston with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Fitz.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Ball Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Buckman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
It's really, really not that good.
It is episode number 225 of the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. We are right here at 1600 Buckslayer Place, the beautiful Buckatorium. Mm-hmm. And I say beautiful because everyone in here is beautiful.
Yeah.
Lovely. Sherrard, Illinois. Zip code undetermined. I don't even think this town has a zip code.
It doesn't, actually.
Prove me wrong. My name is Steve. In the studio today is Kurt.
Hey, guys.
Eric.
Howdy.
And Tank, the intern.
I'm here. Again, unfortunately.
Tank Cameron Tank.
Notepad and a whiskey. He's good. That's how we pay him.
Dude, he's a country artist on the rise.
Yeah.
He's drinking, wearing shorts, and has a beard, so he's got most of the qualifications.
Did you say what episode number this was?
225.
Wow, that's a milestone. Everything's a milestone from now on.
What, just because I do something?
Every time we're going to say that, oh, this is a milestone.
Oh, I thought you were saying because I didn't screw something up. It's a milestone.
It goes in 5-episode increments.
Oh, what a milestone.
Damn.
Man, this episode's going platinum, boy.
Damn. All right. Give me a veteran shout out.
You want a veteran shout out?
Me. In the meanwhile, while he's pulling that up, you can go to workingclassbowhunter.com, the contact form, and submit a veteran there. Help us with pronunciation, please. And thank you to all our veterans.
All right. So the vet shout out this week is one Mr. Blake East. He's a Marine. Marine Corps. Hope I said that right. Marine Corps. I'm just riling everyone's feathers. Blake East served for 4 years in the United States Marine Corps as an 0311, infantry rifleman. See, this guy did it right. He taught me how to pronounce that. One tour in Afghanistan. He's an extremely passionate hunter, has consistently killed mature deer in Pennsylvania. He also introduced me to hunting and inspired me to join the Marines. I will be finishing up a 6-year enlistment as of July as a 3521 diesel mechanic.
Nice.
And that's it. This is your buddy Alex Whitmoyer? Dude, you got to tell me how to pronounce your own name. Alex, I sent this in for Blake. Both those guys can be found at Final Stop Outdoors on Instagram. It's a page I use to share their whitetail hunting journey together. So, Blake, thank you for your service to this country and
you
as well, Alex, because not only did you get a guy to become passionate about the outdoors, but passionate about the country that the outdoors happens to be in, and he wants to go defend it. So thank you both for your service, especially you, Blake East.
Thank you.
Very cool. Thank you, guys.
That's all I got.
We'll just cut into it. First, we got to talk about a sponsor. It's that time of year for this sponsor, especially Sniper Hunting Products. We are using their cell cams and their non-cellular cams. I'm in love with them. I know Eric loves his. Mine works out great.
I got a
cell tower right on the north end of my property.
There you go.
But no, they're awesome cameras. Battery life's good. Picture quality is excellent. And we can save you some money if you're wanting to dive into your first cell cam or get another one. Code working, or it's WCBH10. And you save yourself a little bit of money. And I think that even applies on top of their sale. So if you look for a sale, you dive in there, throw that code on there. Yeah, I don't know for sure, but try it.
Sale on a sale.
So yeah, check out sniperhuntingproducts.com. Awesome stuff and great people behind that business too. So we don't do business with companies that have shitty people behind them. At least we try not to.
When even their lower end camera has a little nice little LCD screen, little 2.5-inch LCD screen, dude, you know you're in business. They're putting out a great camera.
It's good stuff.
And it was easy for me to set up and figure out. So if I can figure it out, set it up.
Anyone can.
Anybody can.
I will say this. I've used the Moultrie Mobile setups. I'm not trying to do that whole company versus company thing because it is what it is. But one thing I do like about the Sniper, when you move it, you shut it off and move it and turn it on and it's fine. With like the Moultrie setup, you have to like make sure the modem's fucking connected to the camera, and then you got to make sure that there's signal on the modem, and then you got to sit there and stand in front of it and wait 5-10 minutes. Like, oh, okay, yeah, send in pictures to the app. We're good. Nothing is worse than thinking that it's working and then you leave, especially if it's a piece of property, which is why you're putting a cell cam there that you don't want to walk into all the time, and to find out that it's not working, you got to walk out, then walk back in to fix it. It's Sniper's just made it simple. So that's my selling point. That's right.
We're all simple minded here. Wait, no, I take that back. That's an insult to all of us.
Simple minded ain't bad. Dumb. I mean, that's you. There's a difference.
Dumb, and that's you.
check out Elite Archery. Super excited. Our rituals should be right around the corner. Really pumped for those. I'm shooting the Tempo currently. Tank, you just bought a Tempo.
Sure did.
All camo.
Yeah, all camo.
And Eric, you're shooting the option 7.
7, yep. I love it.
I'm a step down on the option 6.
It's not a step down. It's a little faster.
Well, it's a number down.
Hey, where were you at the 3D shoot last weekend, Broheem?
Yeah.
I was...
You didn't show up.
No, I was... I went to church and dinner with
You didn't go to church.
Believe what you want. Don't forget, I'm a confirmed Catholic. Okay. No, I definitely would have. It would have been cool. It's a
You would have lost.
I'm sure. So it was a good thing you didn't go. You guys did the Father's Day shoot, and
we all shot good. Eric was a little hungover.
I was hungover, so...
What time did you guys end up getting
Sam done? Did beat you, though.
I know. Yeah, it was terrible.
I won.
You won? Mm-hmm. This whole thing?
I did.
What do you want, like, style points, you know?
Fashion.
Points? Oh, fashion, okay. Yeah. Just want to figure out what you were doing.
Good taste and personality.
Okay, we're getting nowhere with this.
Ethics Archery is also a sponsor that's in right now because of it's summertime. You should be shooting your bow and thinking about maybe if you're going to change something, now is the time to change it. Assuming that you're not in the middle of hunting something, but you should always be working on your equipment. I am shooting the 100 grain inserts in my new arrow setup for elk. And yeah, pretty excited about that. There's a code WCB gives you 10% off Ethics inserts. Scent Crusher, HHA, that's another thing going on right now. Scent Crusher, we use the room clean. It's always in business for us, or our sweaty clothes, or when you're going into some sensitive areas. HHA, lifetime warranty on all their products. Made in America. We're tuning those in just all fine and dandy. Manta coolers are coming in handy right now in the summer. Yeah. Been getting those out every weekend. Rattler grips. Those were a big hit at the shoot, man. People were liking our grips. So we actually did a giveaway there, too. So if you want your own custom set of grips or you want your own working-class bowhunter grips, just hit up Rob at Rattler Grips on Facebook. And
I think he got everything, bro.
Wow. This episode, we have the homie, Clint Casper. What's up, dude?
What's going on, fellas?
I was hoping you didn't fall asleep during that long intro.
We let him just stay on there.
What's up?
No, I got through my bottle of Jack and 3 beers. I'm just sitting back and listening to you guys talk. I was intrigued. I was enjoying it. I mean,
you're mesmerized.
It was good conversation.
Well, what's up, man? You haven't been on for a while, and I'm sorry for that.
Ah, man, it's all right. Everybody's busy, man. Busy. Finished up farming, wrapped up shed season, and then right into turkey season. And, you know me, I'm always over here doing the planting beans and corn deal with Dad. So finally getting that wrapped up. And, had both boys had birthdays, one in March, one in May, and just a ton of stuff going on. Yeah, man, just been busy. Me and Danielle both been super busy, and getting ready for hunts and season, and wanted to get to Montana and bear hunt, but man, that snow line up there was just so bad this year. Just
yeah, I didn't know if you went to that hunt or not. I was going to ask you about that.
Nope, didn't make it. I mean, I was staying in close contact with my buddy Brian Barney and then our other buddy Dan out there. And, man, they just weren't getting into bears. And, I mean, it was just so tough, so much snow. I mean, they only had about 2 weeks of the whole season that was even worth probably going out. And just hard to get on any. I mean, you know, it was just one of them deals where it was like, you know, they were hunting 5-6 days a week and seeing like one bear. So they're like, man, they're like, you know, you could come out here for 10 days, 12 days and literally only see two bear. You know, I mean, it was just bad, you know, just bad conditions. And I'm just like, man, you know, like to.
Okay, I got a question for you. That's Montana, all black bears. What's the fascination of going to Montana to hunt black bear versus Canada? Is it the difference between bait and spot and stock?
Well, I mean, it's just Montana has a bunch of color phase bears. So like you can run into cinnamons, chocolates. They have a lot of blondes. Yeah, I mean, like, don't get me wrong, like the bait thing, I mean, that's super effective. And I mean, like, it's a cool hunt. I mean, I'm sure it's like, I've never really hunted bears like to where it's just straight hunting over like a garbage pile type of deal. So,
right. A box of donuts.
Dumpster. Like, I know a lot of guys, I mean, I know that's like an effective way to do it, but I mean, I just like, Montana's gorgeous, number one. I got, you know, two really good buddies out there and Dan and Brian that are just super fun to hunt with. And, I just really like it. I mean, it's a tough hunt. I mean, the percentage, the kill percentage for, archery out there on bears, public land. I mean, dude, it's like low, low, low. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's just one of them. I mean, you guys all know how I am. I like that tough, different shit. I mean, I just like that.
You like the challenge.
Is that just an over-the-counter type of hunt? So, like, if I wanted to go, I could just go get one over the counter? How's that work?
Yeah. You take a bear quiz because you have to be able to distinguish between a grizzly and a black bear because there's quite a few grizzlies out there. So,
can you even get a grizzly tag in Montana?
No.
What the fuck for? Why not?
I mean, a lot of states, man, you can't hunt. You know, there's very few states that even allow any type of like. I mean, there might be like special permit deals somewhere in Montana, but none that I'm aware of. There's just not a whole lot of them. I mean, there's enough to be aware. I mean, like I've seen some out there. I mean, I've seen probably 4 or 5.
Really?
I've been to Montana 3 times. Yeah, I've seen. I can think of 4 that I've seen for sure. 2 and 2. Yeah, I think I've seen. Yeah, and then I saw a big male. So yeah, I've seen 5. I've seen 5, and I've been out to Montana 3 times. So
they're there. They're 5. Just not. I mean, they're just not as.
It's not like a black bear, like right. Fucking raccoons everywhere.
No, mean,
giant fucking raccoons,
I mean,
dude.
And I mean, even the black bears. I mean, there's a lot of bears, but I mean, you got to work for them. I mean, you know, you could hunt 2 days, 15 hours a day of walking, glassing, and hiking and have 30 hours in and have not seen a bear. I mean, you know, it's just, they're a tough animal to hunt. I mean, they move around a lot. I mean, they're hard to predict. I mean, they could literally be about anywhere. And in the spring, right before they're getting ready to breed, I mean, they're covering a lot of territory. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of luck involved in that as far as just running into them. I mean, some of that dark timber, you could sit on the edge of a meadow waiting on a bear to come out in that meadow and feed, and if you're not there in the 10 minutes that he decides to be there, you might sit there all day and leave between 4 and 5, and that bear comes out at 4:15 and feeds to 4:25 and then goes back in the dark timber, and literally if you're not there for that window right there in that spot, you may not see that bear for 3 more days. I mean, that's just the game that you play. You know, it's just it's in little secluded pockets where usually in the spring, it's the greenest grass and the greenest features are where you'll find your bears and stuff. But, you know, it's, like I said, this year there was so much snow and rain and stuff early on. I mean, it was just tough to get into some of those really good spots. But,
yeah, I was just curious because that's something I was talking today with a couple buddies about doing a bear hunt next year, because it's kind of like a bucket list hunt, especially for like a Midwestern guy who's
oh
primary hunting is whitetail hunting. Right. I feel like black bear's in that top 3 to 5 that's like, oh, it's a bucket list thing. You want to do it? I always say I think it's something I'll do once, and if I get the bug, maybe I'll do it again over bait. Or maybe, I want to be like, oh, I'm going to go to Montana and do that style black bear hunting.
Well, ask Austin Chandler when he's like, yeah, I'll do this just once, and when he's gone like 2-3 years
hooked.
In a row.
Yeah, he's hooked.
Yeah, man, it's addicting. I mean, it's fun. I mean, I killed that one in Saskatchewan, and then I was pumped to go to Montana and hunt him with Brian. And I mean, I could have killed some smaller, 5-footers and stuff, but I was looking for, a good one and one that was going to be mature and stuff, and I just ran into a bunch of younger ones and a couple of the older, more mature boars. I just never got in on close enough, put some stocks on, but just wasn't able to get it done and stuff. But, that's a fun hunt, man. Idaho's got a lot, Montana, all those states, Colorado, Utah. I mean, there's some big bears that come out of all those, and there's a lot of color phase bears out there, which is cool.
While we're on the topic, man, we've talked about this before on the podcast, but it's something I've been thinking about a lot, just hunting different states, because you had a successful antelope hunt last September?
I went out in August and hunted 7 days with Brian and then hunted some by myself, and then I went straight into Colorado, didn't kill any antelope, then went straight into my Colorado hunt by myself for muleys, and then I came back with 4 days and hunted with our buddy Dan out there, came back for just a 4-day hunt, and got on a totally different piece of section of the state and some different public ground I've never hunted, and man, we got into them and ended up killing them the very last day.
Well, I thought you were in Montana with Brian when you killed that. Maybe I was just mixed up.
No, I was with him early. And then, I mean, we were hunting stuff that he, some stuff that, I mean, not too far from me, an hour and a half, maybe an hour, and I was hunting with his good buddy, Dan, that I've become really good buddies with, from hunting through Brian and stuff. And, but no, Brian was actually out with his daughter. She killed a nice mule deer with her rifle. They were out on a father-daughter hunt that same time. So, I actually didn't get to hook up with him, but.
What hunts do you have planned this year? Because, I mean, I know you always got something going on. Where are you going late this summer?
Blanked on Colorado was like 92% the guaranteed to draw this really good unit, and blanked. So I grabbed an over-the-counter elk and muley tag in Idaho. So I'm actually going to land in Idaho for 2 weeks.
Oh, shit.
And then, going to dive in, and I got a couple pretty good units picked out.
Over-the-counter?
Got some good stuff there. My buddy Dan, my buddy Dan, he applied with me for Colorado, and like I said, neither one of us drew. Brian got in.
So the unit you're talking about for Colorado, you had preference points built up to draw this unit.
Yeah, I had, me and Dan had 3 of them apiece, and Brian drew with 3, and we did not. So, I mean, he sweeped in, and we didn't. So, I mean, that's how tight it was. So then we were like, all right.
So is it fair to say, because I built my first Colorado preference points this year, because they change the way you do it, is it safe to say if I draw 4 years of preference points, I could probably draw any unit I want for muleys?
You won't draw any unit. But see, here's the deal with these preference points. And this is what I tell people all the time. Right now, the best unit I've ever hunted in Colorado for mule deer was a 1-point unit. That was my second choice that I literally, I could draw that unit with 1 point every year. The difference maker there, and the reason why it's a 1-point unit, is because it's not known as a fantastic unit, because not a lot of people, there's about 10 units in the state of Colorado that everybody wants to hunt mule deer. A lot of them's down in that Gunnison area because there's always giants that come from that area. But here's the deal. It's Colorado. In every one of those units, if you put in the time and you want to get back in there, like, for example, this 1-point unit I'm talking about, it was 13.4 miles for me to go from my truck to where I camped. That was my starting point. It was 13 miles in. Most guys will not do that in that unit. Therefore, they will never hunt the great hunting that unit has to offer. But if you're willing to go in, you know, some of those 1-point units, they don't get hunted near as hard as some of these units that are 4 and 5 points, because everybody and their brother wants to hunt those publicized units.
Right, right.
It's kind of, it's like, look at Pike County 25 years ago. Pike County, Illinois, 25 years ago, no one even really knew what that was. Now let's flash forward to 1999, 2001, 2005. Pike County, literally every deer hunter in America was coming to hunt Pike County.
Right.
And what did that do? That literally took success rates down in Pike County, mm-hmm. and it brought them up. And other surrounding counties now all of a sudden started to be the best counties in the state.
Damn, son.
Secretly. I mean, I was one of those guys. I was like, okay, I'm going to hunt Pike County. And then once I got to Pike County and hunted a couple times, I'm like, wait a minute. I don't want to hunt Pike County anymore. I want to hunt these surrounding counties that touch Pike County or are close to Pike County, but nobody's coming to hunt. There's
right.
no pressure. You know, there's right. not that all these sense. Out of state. And that's kind of how I look at Colorado. I mean, dude, there's some units in Colorado you would need 8, 9, 10 points to draw an archery tag for mule deer in, because they're just they're just that well known. There's multiple 200 inches that come from there every year. But like I said though, your magazines and your different places are pushing those units because they've been hot spots for years. So
if
you go. You know, if you go look at Eastman's or you go look at GoHunt.com or whatever, Hunt and Fool, whatever, they're going to be pushing 55 and pushing 71 and pushing, you know, blah, 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 because those units have been typically good. But there's a bazillion dudes trying to get in those units. So that's mm-hmm. why every single year it takes more and more points.
Right,
I'm kind of – I'm on the verge of I want to get close to those areas, but I don't really want to necessarily hunt them, because I can hunt – every 2 years in a unit that's probably just as good, if not better, not near as many people, and it's not like widely known yet, but it's still down in that area, so those good gene pools are still in there, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, that makes perfect. So basically what you're telling me, because I'm building points for a good unit to draw in the next 4 years for mule deer. So basically off the record, you're going to give me some insight on what units I need to get my ass in 3 years.
Oh, dude, in once you hit 2 points
next year.
Once you hit 2 points, dude, I could think of 3 units right now that if you're willing to be in good enough shape to go in 10, 12 miles, set up camp and hunt, you know, hunt for 7, 8, 10 days. No doubt in my mind, because I've been there and done it, no doubt in my mind I can put you, you know, in 180 plus bucks. I mean,
so AKA we're going hunting in a couple of years for mule deer in Colorado.
Yeah.
Count me in. Let's go. Road trip.
I know.
We can
I'm trying to have Steve, my feet bleed. You know what I'm saying?
Steve's
not going mule deer hunting. He can't fucking walk to his tree stand out of the goddamn truck.
Dude, I'm telling you, man, dude, if I can get a golf cart or something, man. Take me up all them big ass hills.
You will never go on a Western hunt. I don't even, like, when I talk about doing these hunts, Steve, I put, like, you know when those blinders on horses when they walk? I have those. That's me talking to everybody else but Steve in the room. Steve's in that blind spot on my blinders. Because I know you won't go. Like, you'll say you'll go, but you don't have, like, the
drive.
You don't have the drive motivation yet in archery to get it done. Because you're going to want to just stand around and talk and bullshit and breathe heavy down the bottom of a mountain. Whereas, like I had the conversation, me and Cameron worked together, our intern. Hey, Cameron.
Hi.
We were talking. I'm like, dude, when I go on a hunt, yeah, I want to have fun, but I'm also, like, trying to get after my agenda, which is to be successful. Yeah, right. But that's fun to me is that grind like that.
Yeah.
So... Yeah. That's the thing. Like, I want to go out. I'm, like, trying to expand my knowledge into Western hunting. And the more research I do and the more I talk to guys like you and build these points and learn how it is. I mean, I'm not going to learn, like, how you know it, Clint, until I go. But that's the exciting thing for me is throwing myself in there. Like, this year in September, which, you know, we've talked about. I've talked about on the podcast. I'm going hunting in a unit in Colorado for elk, public land elk. More to cut my teeth on learning how to hunt while I'm building preference points in the meantime in other states and even in Colorado. So I would rather learn on over-the-counter tags and fuck up on over-the-counter tags and learn the basics of hunting and then save my time and money and on preference points and then use my knowledge from cutting my teeth on harder-to-hunt units that most people are at and all that.
Get your feet wet.
Yeah, get my feet wet, you know.
Yeah.
But, Clint, at the same time, I guess – I'll see if you agree with this. My buddy Jeremy that we're going with hunting, him and my dad, we have a unit that isn't a first pick unit. Like, it wouldn't be a unit where it doesn't seem like everyone's in this unit, and the success odds aren't very good. But the way Jeremy was explaining to me, he's like, well, you got to keep in mind the success percentage for archery. That's a lot of guys that live there that buy tags that probably don't ever go. It's people that miss. It's people that don't go that deep. So that's where those percentages are played in. He's like, there's elk there for sure. If just like you said, if we're willing to dive in there, we will get into elk, is what he's saying.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just off the 3 years I've been to Colorado, two of them by myself, one of them with a buddy, the shortest walk-in so far that I've done would be 7-8 miles. And once we got past the 5-6 mile mark on all these trips, I've rarely seen a person, because not many guys, whether it's physical capability, mental status, or flat out they're just scared to do it, they don't like getting more than about 3 to 5 miles from that truck. They just don't. I mean, they just, you know, like last year, I was hiking up a couple of these switchbacks heading to the top of this pass to dive down into this next big bottom, big basin, and then I was going to go up the next side. And in that bowl, in that basin, there was probably 7 or 8 guys, a couple elk camps, a couple mule deer camps, and I walked right through them all, and they're like, you know, where are you going? I'm like, oh, you know, I'm going to keep going, and they're like, well, hey, you know, this is mile 8, don't you know? I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm like, I'm thinking about getting in around that 12, 13 mark. And they just looked at me like in disbelief.
like you're insane.
Oh, dude, like I was an alien. And they're like, you're going by yourself in that deep? I'm like, well, that's kind of where I'm wanting to land somewhere. I'm like, I don't know. I'm just going to play it by ear. I mean, obviously I knew. I just wasn't going to say. But obviously I knew in my head. I already had a spot picked out and knew where I was wanting to go, you know. But they looked at me like I was out of control. I mean, like I was in some type of like Martian that had just landed. I mean, they just gave me this look like, are you serious? So, you know, I filled up water and bullshitted for 5 minutes. I'm like, all right, well, fellas, I'll, you know, catch you later. Good luck, you know, whatever. And it took off. And I know when I walked away, those guys were like, that kid's fucking nuts. Like, what is he doing? You know, I mean, like they just had that look on their face when I said that. But I got back there, never ran into a person besides two hikers who were training for this like ultra marathon run.
Did you see Cam Haynes run by here or something?
Carrying a rock.
No, yeah, carrying a rock. I did not see him with a rock over his shoulder and a selfie stick out in front of him. I did not see any of that.
Thank God.
But I mean, I think I saw 30 some different bucks. And by no means am I, you know, a professional mule deer hunter. I mean, I'm very green, still a rookie by a long shot, cutting my teeth on it. But I got into 5 or 6 bucks that would have been in that 180 to 200 inch mark. I mean, just some giants, and was able to make plays and hunt them for the next couple of days. I mean, it was, you know, I had opportunities. I mean, I never got to actually draw back and cut one loose, but I mean, the opportunity and the animals were there. I just wasn't able to get, you know, a couple times I needed 20 more yards, or I needed one to stand up, or I needed the wind to not shift on me, or, you know, just stuff like that. But, you know, but the point I'm making is those animals probably were never seen by any of those guys ever that I was hunting. I was hunting totally different animals than what those guys were back at mile 8. I was out mile 13. You know, there's just a big difference. I mean,
yeah, and I guess maybe that's where it's gonna be tough. But that's where maybe we'll see more critters, because our plan is, you know, we're planning to truck camp and also to tent camp. Actually, we're planning more to tent camp. You know, that's the goal, is to get in. That way, we don't have to get in and then hike out and then hike back in even further. So we just get it all at once.
And I mean, you know, I know we got a lot of whitetail stuff to talk about, so I don't want to spend too much, but I will get into this real quick just because I've got you on, you know, on the phone and we're talking about it. If there's one thing that I can tell you, and you know, me and your dad talked about this whenever we was at the party back in the winter, the biggest thing on those hunts is you have to realize that literally any second a bull could cut loose, bugle, and you could be at full draw a minute later. I mean, literally, it can happen that fast at any point in time. So, I mean, like, the biggest thing is to always have that mental factor that, man, there could be a 6x6 toad right around the next corner or right over that next hill. Or,
right, right.
You know, you just got to keep hunting and stay after it, dude, and something good will happen. I mean, that's the biggest – that's the biggest thing that I think people forget about when they start planning these out west hunts is you've got to mentally have that mindset that there is no other option. There's no turning back. There's no quitting. Like, you got to give it 110 every day, man.
Well, that's just the same thing. I get that 100% because that's how I view whitetail hunting because what drives me nuts is if it's November or late October or whenever, if I'm not in the tree, I'm like, fuck, there's a big buck right by my stand. Like, yep. I want to be there when that buck, like you said, breaks loose and he just pops up out of the timber. That's how you kill him. You know, you don't, Steve, that's why Steve doesn't do well because he doesn't go. So that's, I'm not holding back on you anymore, brother. Like, we're changing you.
Steve, so what you guys are trying
Steve's
to say is just
smart, though.
Are you guys?
While you guys are all out, he stays home and tends your does for you, and you guys don't even know about it.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, like,
bro, what are you doing? Why are you putting me on blast like this?
He can't tend his own does.
Well, because I'm trying to let the world know your big secret. I mean,
no, man, why are you doing that?
This is what you're doing. I mean,
if it sounds like I've been harsh on Steve the last like 5 podcasts, it's because yes, I am. I'm putting the heat on you, and as we get closer to season, it's going to get worse.
You mean the last 200 podcasts?
Yeah. No, it's going to get worse. Like you're going to change as a bow hunter, man.
We're trying to light a fire under
this
your
is
ass,
the year.
What we're doing.
If it doesn't change, things will change.
Nice.
So that's the way to do it. If that's all the I call Steve every morning. Remember our bet for every day I go hunting and you don't?
Yeah, there's going to be
the podcast.
Dude,
like
we got
10
that.
Bucks.
Remember the Hennessy bottle that we're going to mount? We're going to mount that on a shelf in here.
Yeah, on your arm is where it's going to get tattooed.
No. But there's going to be a Henny bottle hanging out.
If you kill a good buck this year, we will put a gold Henny bottle on a shelf up there, and it'll age. I don't know if the Henny gets better with age.
I doubt it.
It's awful right out the gate.
I was going to say, Henny's shit right out of the gate, so it can only get better.
Man, get that bullshit out of here. You're over here blowing up my secrets, talking about my drink.
I'll bury a Henny bottle on my lease in the dirt, and we'll dig it up 5 years from now.
What are those time capsules in there?
Yeah.
Dude, no grass grows around it.
But that's we're going to change you, man. Like this,
so basically, all you guys are still saying is just keep hammering.
Yeah, yes. You know, actually, I even used that term today on accident. And I don't hate Cam Haynes. He's just easy to rip on. Like, the dude's a savage. But it's...
Oh, for sure.
You know, he's a bad motherfucker, man. He really is. But it's just... We're just poking fun. It's easy to do that. I'll poke fun. I make fun of you worse than I make fun of Cameron Haynes.
Yeah.
But the thing, it's just...
It's true.
That's I only make fun of you, though, Steve, because I'm always only hard on you like that because I want to see you be successful. That really is.
And I appreciate
if
it.
If I hated you and I didn't want you to do good, I wouldn't fucking talk
you know
to you.
You know what we should do? We should start being nice to him.
No, fuck that.
That'd be hard to do, son.
It'd be nice to him, then he'd actually do it.
No, because every time someone's nice to me, I think they want something. You know, the one time...
Yeah, we want you to go hunting and we want you to be successful.
The one time women were ever nice to me is when they were like, oh, you're cool. Here, listen to our stories. No, I never had money. I had a fake ID and I could buy booze. Oh. So they acted like they're interested in my story. Yeah.
You were the guy that bought booze, but they didn't invite you to the party.
Yeah, I was the opposite of super bad. Like, as soon as, like, they walk up with a case of beer, they slam the door right in my face. So don't be nice to me. It brings, like, bad memories.
Okay, all right. But, Clint, I mean, don't you agree? Steve's got to get his head out of his ass and chase after it. That grind will teach you
time.
To hunt other things.
I think
things.
It's time.
Yeah.
It's time. I think once more success comes your way, I think you'll find yourself having – more of that, like,
drive.
Oh, man, I've got to reciprocate. I've got to like redo this feeling. I mean, like, you go zip a freaking arrow, dude, through a just not even a giant, just a good buck, like a 125 buck, just standing there 30 yards making a scrape. You watch your arrow zip through one. I mean, it's just one of them deals where you're gonna be like, holy fuck!
Like, it's like a high, man. You want to get that fix?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, That adrenaline rush, man, like, I mean, when I'm running or when I'm doing stupid shit after a long day's work, like, I'm literally thinking about that midway. Like, I'm like, dude, you've got to do this shit right now because it's all going to pay off down the road. Like, you know, whether it's on a mule deer, whether it's on a 12-day hunt for whitetails that I've been grinding, hunting all day, like mentally and physically, like I have to be tough in order to make that happen. Because in my head, I'm just like, I want to feel that adrenaline rush. Like it's the best high you could ever have, dude. And you'll get that. I mean, as more success comes your way, dude, you'll sit back and be like, okay, all these idiots that used to talk all this shit, I understand now. Like, I get it. Like, I totally get it. Like, you'll see. You'll see. And it'll happen, dude. I got faith in you, my man. even though you drink freaking Henny. That's freaking gross, and
it's awful.
You're constantly trying to get my old lady's pants. I still feel like you're gonna get it done, and I'm in your corner. I'm in your corner, bro.
bro, you can help me out by stop answering the phone when I call at 3 a.m. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm just trying to see if you need something important, or if you're just trying to sex Danielle. You know what I'm saying?
It's usually the latter. Am I using that term correctly? I don't know. It's the second one. I'm not a smart man. I'm simple-minded as the...
Simple-minded.
Dumb.
As we mentioned before.
Dumb.
Idiot.
Dipshit idiot.
Well, Clint, we'll dive in. I appreciate all the Western hunting talk because it's something I've been fantasizing about a lot, and it's something that's all in our mind, you know, as Midwestern hunters. Like, we want to get out that way, and you've done it. I mean, you're Ohio, man. You're deep into the jungle of the Midwest, and it's a little easier for us. It's take off 8 hours for us to get out west, you know.
Yep.
You're 8 hours
more.
It's a
whole day's drive.
So,
yeah.
Hours.
When I drove to Montana last year, it was 28 hours one way.
Ooh.
Good grief.
Jesus.
Yep. I don't even have a vehicle that would make it that far.
I don't have a bank account that I could put gas in my truck to make it that far.
But so let's talk whitetails. We'll hop into some social media questions, and I imagine that we might answer some questions that we're gonna answer some questions just talking about it that are gonna be on social media. What are you doing for whitetails right now, man? I know it's I guess the time of this podcast is late June. I'm so lost.
Yep.
What time of year it is?
Yep.
Yeah, late June. So what's on your mind right now, and what are you thinking about for the next month or so?
I mean, you know, I've got. By now, it would be great to say that, you know, everyone listening's got all their early food plots in, whether it's clover or chicory or alfalfa, whatever. I'm in pretty good shape there. I've had minerals and stuff out since early spring.
Lucky bastard.
I got nine cameras running right now. So I still don't have a whole... I don't have my full, you know, inventory of cameras out yet, but I got a pretty good jump on that. And finishing up with corn and beans, so a lot of that's been in the ground, and, you know, beans are starting to come up and corn's up and whatnot. So, I mean, you know, right now I'm mainly focused on inventory, and, you know, I just saw a couple bucks the other day in a bachelor group, and, I mean, at this point you can tell who's going to be big and who's not. I mean, your bucks that have already got brow tines, they got main beams out past their ears, they maybe have that G2 started. I mean, those bucks are going to be good ones. I mean, you can't tell inches or anything, but I mean, you can tell right now who's going to be big and who's not. So I'm really starting to key in on that. Trail cams play a big factor in what I do. But I'm interested right now in, I would say, two things. I always usually have a new farm or two, so I spend a lot of time in June just trying to get a feel for what sections of the farm deer like. You know, there's every farm I've got, there's certain sections that there just is more deer on one section than there is on the other or whatever. So usually I'm trying to figure out new farms. And then number two on my farms that I've had, or the, you know, or my older farms, I'm trying to figure the inventory out right now. I mean, I'm trying to see, okay, you know, there's two bucks over here, there's one buck over here that all look really good. And then as time goes into July, you know, a month from now, you're going to really, really, really be able to tell, okay, this buck for sure is going to be a shooter. This one probably isn't. So in the next month, I'm going to go from inventory on just trying to find it looks like good deer to actually specifically narrowing down to single deer. Like, okay, this farm's got two bucks for sure that are going to be bucks to hunt. This farm doesn't. So that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, you know, I don't get too crazy carried away with switching cameras around a whole lot right now. I mean, I got them on food sources, or like we're allowed to run minerals and stuff and whatnot. So, I mean, you know, that's a good way to, you know, to get a lot of pictures quick and fast and see what's on the farms.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I said, I've got two new farms this year. So I'm trying to figure out, you know, what sections of those farms have a lot of deer. So I'm doing a lot of glassing in the evenings, just kind of seeing, okay, there's 15 deer on this side. I saw five on the other. You know, I'm just trying to kind of piece the puzzle together a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, I don't get too crazy. I mean, food plots definitely are my main concern early, because, I mean, those play a big factor later. So
I got a question about food plots, if you don't mind. When you plant your spring ones, when you plant those spring food plots, will you turn those spring food plots over and then replant into a fall plot, or will you do a separate plot for the fall?
A lot of stuff I plant in the spring, which primarily because, you know, Dad and I farm around 1,200 acres of corn and beans. So I've got
corn. Goddamn, I'm coming to Ohio. Yeah.
So I've got corn and beans, you know, everywhere. So I plant a lot of clover, a lot of alfalfa. And basically, I can plant that and pretty much let that go year-round. And then I can frost seed it in the fall or frost seed it in the spring. So, I mean, a lot of my plots, when I plant them and rip them up, I don't have to do much to them for a couple of years besides spray them and just keep them clean, mow them. Now, some plots I will rip up and I'll totally redo, and I might plant brassica or turnips, and I'll plant those early in the fall, late summer, and I'm saving those for later on in the year when it starts getting colder. But, I mean, my main plots are going to be clover and silly beans. I mean, I'm a huge... If you told me I could only plant one food plot for the rest of my life, I'm going to plant standing silly beans. And if I didn't have farm equipment and I wasn't able to do that, I'm going to run clover. Those are my two favorites. I mean, I think early in the season, clover is a killer. And pretty much all throughout the year, especially late season, you can't beat standing beans. So
right.
That's kind of my game plan there.
Me and Eric agreed in sync there.
Hell yeah.
Yep.
I wish I had the property where I could put in and leave standing beans, because
I left some in last year and they just abolished them.
They destroy it.
Oh yeah. It's insane.
What was Clark saying when he was talking about if you have standing soybeans, you at least want to have at least an acre, just because of how hard they're going to hammer it?
Doug from Horny Buckseed was saying that.
Was that Doug? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, because they'll just destroy it. Oh, yeah, no, 3 acres, I thought.
I didn't leave enough in, and they destroyed them within like a month.
And I would say... Last year, I had, that was probably 2.5 acres of standing beans, and we didn't get some of the beans off around that plot, like actual fields, till into December just because of the weather. And so once I got all those fields off, and now the only thing is left is 2.5 acres. That 2.5 acres... literally, legit, every single night, guaranteed. I mean, I will guarantee you any night, I don't care what the weather was doing, what wind, every night, guaranteed 35-plus deer. And some nights, I've actually got some footage on my my DSLR of 60-plus deer in that field in one evening. I mean, it is nuts with snow and cold weather how that standing beans will pull literally every deer off every neighboring property around you for probably a couple miles to your farm.
Within 10 miles.
Oh, dude, it's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, it is. It's nuts. I mean, it was nothing to have 40, 50 deer on that field. Now, that sounds all fine and dandy until you're trying to hunt it, because now, you know, I mean, it's pretty hard to get in, get out, and, you know, stay undetected with 50 sets of eyes and 50 notes. So, I mean, so... There's a good and a bad side to it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, a lot of times if I'm hunting standing beans, I'm trying to hunt deer going to it just because it's so hard to hunt right over the field, because, I mean, you literally are looking at 50 deer and they're looking at you. So,
mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, 3 to 5 acres would be optimum. I mean, I would say in 60 days, those 2.5 acres went from beautiful, full standing field of beans to absolutely picked over, not a crumb or kernel left. Then probably
just a bunch of stems left over.
Oh, dude! Oh, it's crazy. I mean, and they will spend all day, all night. I mean, you go there at noon, there'd be 15 deer in that field. Feet. I mean, it's you know, with super cold and snow like we had last year, that was the perfect weather for late season and for those standing beans. I mean, that was. I couldn't have asked for better temps and better weather conditions.
Man, I wonder if you could plant like peanuts or something. They'd probably go nuts over those.
Peanut trees.
Because they're so full of protein. They'd love that in the wintertime. I know it. Might try that here. Well, yeah,
what
else?
What was Clark's? Pedro? Peanut.
Oh, no. I think Clark
remember Pedro?
Was
Buck Pedro who planted peppers?
Yeah, no.
Jalapenos? Or habaneros on it, too?
Yeah.
Was that his name, Pedro?
Yeah. Pedro the Buck. Let's hit up some social media questions. We'll start with Facebook. And I'm just going to start from the bottom of the gate. Bo Martinick? He has a podcast that you were just on, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah. Bo Martinick. Yeah. Martinick. He just started East Meets West. Yeah. Yeah, good buddy of mine.
Yes. So, how long until you and Carrie Underwood announce you're together? Everyone's wondering.
That's going to be tough. I mean, we kind of had to call that off.
Damn.
Yeah.
Tough break.
Damn, I thought Danielle was right for the picking after that.
Well,
damn.
She's involved in this. Complications. You know, had to call it off. Me and Danielle actually have we have another one in the oven.
Is that a fact?
So
what?
Yeah, it's a fact. Yeah.
Damn. You know what? I was just gonna joke around about that, but damn, congratulations!
Yeah. Congrats, man.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, we got some family and friends and stuff, but haven't made like a big, you know, like social media announcement or anything like
How
that.
How far along is she?
Hold on, I need to make a
today
breaking
today,
news.
She's 4 months along.
Today would be 8 weeks.
I thought he got her pregnant at our party.
I'd be kind of worried that it might have been yours. I mean, you guys did disappear quite often, so I don't know.
Yeah,
it comes out 5'3" and can't fucking hunt at all. And fat.
Don't worry, the kid's gonna grow only 2 more inches, and then he's it.
Can't hunt his way out of a paper fucking bag.
God damn it, Steven.
Oh, damn, dude, that would
Steve
suck.
Got me.
Because I would hate to break up a family because I'm like, man, sorry, you and your husband are gonna break up over this, and I'm not gonna be around for the kid either. So you're gonna be a single mother.
Congrats, man. We'll have to do a breaking news clip for that. Big Game Polina asks, we know this guy very well. He's a great dude. Hardcore listener. Maybe our number. He's like our contract party for the podcast.
Yeah.
He asks, when am I going to finally meet you? And then how do you tolerate Stephen Moeller's non-scent crusher odor in close quarters?
Well, I mean, I think it's the love and desire that pours from his pores that usually gets me. I mean, he does smell bad, but it's just there's so much love there. There's so much love there. I mean, it's hard to resist him. And we definitely need to meet, my man. No doubt, we'll have to. Next time I'm over your guys' direction or something, or I don't know. Well,
he's from Connecticut, so we'll have to figure something out.
Oh well, then shit, I'm actually closer. I'm gonna have to go his direction.
Yeah, I'm about to say you're closer to him. Shit,
go get some seafood. Yeah. Say hi to.
Yeah, man, some lobster, no doubt. Hell yeah.
David Ebright from Whitetail Experience asks, out of state hunting trip breakdown. Where do you save some cash? Gear, travel essentials, pre-scouting? These are all question marks at the end of all those.
So, yeah, I mean, I would say for a guy who's wanting to do a trip, I would do like a 12 to 15 month plan. I mean, I would just set back like, okay, I'm going to set back $80 or I'm going to set back, you know, whatever, $70 a month, whatever it is. And I mean, your biggest expenses are going to be your gear and stuff. But once you get that stuff bought, I mean, you can reuse that every year. So, I mean, your first year doing it, it's going to seem like, oh, my God, it's so expensive. But if you can set aside money every month and then start to, like, make a list of things you need and slowly start to knock an item off that list every now and again, you know, do not wait till the month before your hunt and be like, okay, I need a jet boil. I need a Big Agnes tent. I need a Slumberjack sleeping bag. I need, you know, and you add it up and it's $4,800 worth of stuff. Like, do not do that. You know, like mm-hmm. you know, make
we,
a.
We
make
just
a
ordered
plan.
Our sleeping bags and our packs Sunday.
Oh yeah.
Or Saturday, me and my dad did.
Yep. Big, and it's big money stuff. I mean, you know, good packs are a couple hundred bucks minimum. Good sleeping bags is 150 to 200 pretty easy minimum. I mean, so yeah, I mean, you could rack up between my sleeping pad, my sleeping bag, and my tent. And but mind you, I'm going ultra, ultra, ultra light on everything, which is more money. I've got probably $1,100 in those three items combined.
I can believe it.
Pretty easy.
Yeah, your pack, you're saying, you tell me at the working class bow hunter party, it was like $850, yeah. Something like that?
Yeah, if you were to buy, I think if you were to buy my pack, which the guys at Kefauver, I mean, not to be sponsoring, you know, talk about people and different stuff, but the guys at Kefauver I work with pretty regularly, and they hook me up. But, yeah, I mean, if you were just to go out and straight up buy the pack and everything I've got, oh, yeah, man, you'd be in that 7 to 8 probably pretty easy. I mean, with the frame and the bag and the accessories and the add-ons. Oh, oh yeah, man. I mean,
how do you bring a box fan with you though? I mean, how do you keep that running at night so you can sleep,
well,
dude?
I can't give away all my secrets. I'm
trying to figure this one out.
I could tell you in private, but we're gonna have to keep that, you know, off the podcast. I mean,
yeah, that's an industry secret.
Dude, that's
you got really good sponsors. How
that's
you get that
only
out.
For the homies.
Michael Lambert asked, my question, has there ever been a buck that got away, a huge trophy that you hunted for a while but was never able to get close to close a deal with it? What year, how big, and what do you know what happened to it? And do you know what happened to it? Sorry, I'm reading from a distance. I got bad eyes.
Oh, you're good. You're good. Yeah, good old Lambert. Just a shout out. I was best man at his wedding Saturday. He just got married. Happy for you, bro.
Run for your life.
Buddy of mine. Yep. Real good buddy of mine. But, yeah, I hunted a buck for 2 years. We called him Double Drop. He had two drops on his right side. To this day, would still be the biggest buck I'd ever killed. Bigger, he would have been 200 to 2... And I don't know. He would have grossed over 2. I'll say that. I don't know how much. He could have been maybe 205, 206, but he would have grossed over 2 for all the guys that are into the score thing. But just a giant buck. I spent one whole year, did not kill a buck, hunted him. Second year, hunted him primarily that entire year. I know that November, my buddies were all making fun of me because I missed like 3 bachelor parties. I missed a wedding. I missed a buddy of mine's child being born. I missed a lot of shit during the month of November because literally I hunted daylight till dark that whole month. I took off the whole month of work except for like 5 days. And they still make fun of me for it because I lost like 15 pounds, pretty much was on like 6th floor. But that deer, I had that deer under me 5 times that year. And 5 times or 4 out of the 5, it was after dark. And it was just, it was like, I just couldn't win with that buck. I got back to full draw on him one time that year, 52 yards. And it was just so windy. I just couldn't even get settled at all. And I kind of knew that when I drew back, but I wanted to make sure it wasn't just going to magically die down for a second and give me an opportunity. But
right. You gotta go for it.
Yeah. You gotta at least have a chance. But yeah, man, I got thousands of pictures. I've never shed hunted so hard for a set of sheds in my life. I mean, I spent probably 200 hours on that farm that spring looking for those sheds. I mean, I honestly, to this day, I genuinely do not know from December on where that buck went, what happened. Never heard of him getting killed. But to this day, that's still a buck that haunts me. I mean, I was so close. I could taste it. And I mean, I did a lot of crazy shit trying to kill that deer, man. And it just, I just wasn't able to get it done. But, I learned a lot from that buck. And, I mean, he definitely made me a lot better bow hunter because he was one of those deer that it took me months to figure him out. And then once I figured him out, I'd have like a week window and then he'd change what he was doing again. So I'd spend the whole next month trying to figure him out. And I mean, it was just, long story short, I mean, he kicked my ass every week, but he taught me a lot.
Damn, man. That would make me, I think if I'd be the same boat as you, if I get on a 200-inch deer, if it ever happens in my lifetime, I will be that nut. Like, I'm going
to. Oh, you have to. Oh, you have to.
Yeah. I'll just be like, hey, everybody else, fuck all your plans. Fuck your event.
We just shut the podcast down for a whole month.
Yeah,
screw it.
Honestly, that would be the only time we miss a week.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Of podcasting. Yep. Really.
No, you have to. And, like, I mean, people don't realize a lot. Like, 99% of the deer hunting population will never even see a 200 in person. So they don't realize, like, I'm very fortunate to have seen a couple and hunted some bucks that's in that caliber and killed one that was pretty damn close, you know, in the 190s. So, I mean, I know how much that means and how special it is to even have that kind of deer to hunt, let alone kill. And I mean,
dude, I can't tell you that I've ever seen a 200-inch deer. I know for a fact I've seen a deer in the 190s because my dad shot it. But I saw when he was alive. But I don't know if I've ever seen. I think maybe.
I know I haven't.
Fuck, I'm trying to think. The biggest. I saw some good deer last year. I saw some deer in the high 170s probably last year. But not like anywhere close. But I'm trying to think back through the memory bank. Oh, well, no. I saw a deer that would go. I actually filmed it. I got to find it. It's old tape footage back from.
That's what I was thinking about.
04. I filmed a buck, a typical 12. This is kind of a fun story if you don't mind me telling this real quick. I think I've told it before on the podcast.
Well, hold on a second. I got to take off for work. So.
Oh, you do? Fuck. Yep. All right, guys, we lost service for a second. I guess there's a big storm coming in. I was just informed.
There's a storm coming.
And we live in the middle of nowhere. So Eric left for work, and while Eric was leaving for work, we lost service with Clint. When you live in the middle of nowhere, internet gets shitty and cell phone service gets shitty. So I guess there's a big storm coming in, but we'll just ride it out.
Sucks. That's why you city hunt, bro.
So sound quality might sound different on Clint's end, but we're talking about big bucks if we've ever seen like a big 200-incher. And I had a story about a buck I filmed when I was young, like 14, 15. I think I was 14. It was
Was this a VHS camcorder or what was
no,
this?
No,
no.
It was like,
oh, it was one of those mini tapes, wasn't it?
Yeah, that Clint, you know what I'm talking about? Those not VHS.
Yep, mini eights.
Yeah, those. Yeah, it was one of those. So I'm filming from a ladder stand on the edge of a pit cornfield. I'll have to find this footage. I have it somewhere. I got
to
just get
it. It's on your hard drive, man. I haven't
converted to digital. I had to sift through the footage. So I get this video. It's early morning, like kind of where it's like still sort of gray out. And this buck steps out and is chasing this doe. And he's a typical 12. And in the video, you can tell he's 170 plus. So I filmed this deer. It's before shotgun season. And back in the day, our buddy Jim Burns, which still we need to make a podcast happen. It's got to happen in my dad's house, though. He's like the greatest dude. He's hunted everything. He's hunting from this area. He's hunting maybe 300 yards as a crow flies from where I filmed this deer like 3-4 days before. Now it's shotgun season. He kills big bucks. He's a big buck killer. He'll wait. If not, he just enjoys being out there. He'll wait. He sees this, like, four does come filing in down this ridge, and he sees one side of this buck, and he's like, oh, my God. Like, he's joking around when he says, he always goes, oh, my God. And, like, when he tells the stories, and he said this, there is a God. Like, he's like, I seen the one side of this buck come down the hill, and I'm like, there's no way. Like, this is going to happen to me. And so this buck comes in, comes right underneath him. He's getting ready to shoot and realizes this buck is missing half of a rack on the one side. He's telling me, he goes, Kurt, I'm telling you, this buck was a typical 12. This buck was every bit of the high 180s as a typical. So in the meantime, I was tagged out. This is the second day of first firearm season. I had shot a buck Friday morning. So this is Saturday when this happened. My buddy Colton was sitting in my stand where I filmed that buck out of. This buck, the day before, or no, the same morning Jim saw this buck, it would have been an hour before. This buck runs across the field chasing a doe and stops, and Colton shoots, and the buck falls. and he said he's looking, and then the buck gets up, shakes his head, and runs off.
That's a bad headache.
He gets up to it. He shot this buck's rack in half on one side. So he has at home the end of the main beam. The end would it'd be the 4G5 and then the end of the main beam. So he's got the very tip. Jim gets back and goes, "You never guess what I fucking saw." And so he looks up and Colton's sitting there twirling the end of that main beam in his hand. He's like, "Oh my God." He's like, "If I would have known, I would have shot that deer," because it pieced the main beam together. And it, dude, you can tell it's every bit of the deer in the 180s, man. It's just a super giant. So that would be the biggest typical I've ever seen.
Would you guys shoot a half rack buck?
Dude, I don't know. I don't know. What would you do, Clint, if you knew a buck was high 180s and he came in with a half rack? What would you do?
Well, I shot one in the 150s a few years ago that I didn't know had busted off his other side. And when I got up to him, I about cried.
I had that happen too. I shot a buck that it would have been 09. That's it, the buck in my kitchen, guys. The one that's hanging there with the half rack.
Yeah, I saw.
Oh yeah, you saw it, Clint. That buck's every bit of 160s, I think. But if he was both the same on both sides, he's one side's all jacked. But he had two brow tines that are the same, and they're 6-7 inch brow tines and just big dark chocolate rack. When I found him, I'm like, oh fuck, one side. I didn't know. I saw his good side and shot him.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, that was the same thing to me. He came in chasing the doe. It was right at last late, split second, you know, and I'm like, oh, I know that buck. So immediately I quit looking at his horns and start getting focused on the shot. And he was like 37, 38 yards and smoked him. And I got up to him and I'm like, he's only got a brow tine and 3 inches of main beam on the left side. I'm like, oh, fuck. But I mean, you know.
What do you do?
I mean, it was a cool mount. Like, I've got him mounted, like, licking his shoulder. So, I mean, like, it's a cool mount. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, it was... I mean, a deer that's in the 180s, though, I mean, man, that's tough. Because, I mean, you don't want to shoot one like that because you want him to have both sides at the same time. Like, you may never in your life get an opportunity to shoot a deer of that caliber. Like, so...
Yeah, Jim passed him. I couldn't do it, man. Because I looked over and I go... What the fuck broke that main beam? He's like, what in the hell else is out here is what he was thinking.
Oh, dude, if you would have shot it, the thing, he would have got back to camp and had the rest of it.
Because the detail he's telling, he's like, it was fresh break. It was bright white at the break. And he's like, he came in and I'm holding, I'm thinking, like, what in the hell?
Almost broke that big bastard's rack.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Colton said he shot that thing and it laid down and he thought it was dead. He said, got up and shook his head. Like, I think he knocked it out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, could you imagine?
Yeah, it'd rattle you.
Jeez.
But yeah, it's crazy for sure. Steve Stoff asks, what is your best tactic or getting an inventory of bucks on your property during the summer months? We sort of covered this, but
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, food sources, if you can put minerals or, I mean, you know, like there's like in Ohio, you can bait. So, I mean, if you like have a farm that you legit, you're like, okay, I want to get every deer's picture in the next week just to see what's here, if there's anything big. Dude, some guys are against it, some guys are for it, whatever, but you throw 150 pounds of corn down, and the next week, you would have inventory of every single buck. So, you know, minerals that, if you're a state like Pennsylvania where, you know, you can't really bait, well, I guess they can bait up until season, but then they got to take it away, so a lot of guys just won't bait, or if you're a state that you're just not allowed to bait at all, put it on the edge of a soybean field where you see a lot of deer and put it on, like, scan mode. And, I mean, you're going to get pictures of maybe not every deer, but a lot of deer. I mean, you know, so that would be, you know, maybe do a little bit of glassing and see where the majority of the deer are coming out into those fields or where they're hanging out and set your cameras up there. And, I mean, you're going to get a pretty good look at probably most of your deer on the farm, I would say. I mean, maybe not all of them, but pretty good look.
Now, I got a question here, and correct me if I'm dumb, but, like, because I see how soybeans grow, but I don't know about when they start to mature, when, you know, there's good, like, you know, food source on them. I don't know if it's a month after. How soon until, like, a soybean, once it's planted and it grows to when deer are going to start eating that? I'm sure they'll eat anything that's green, but when do they really start flocking in there, and how do they stay off that until, you know, late winter?
Well, soybeans have two times that deer are super, super excited or pumped, whatever word you want to use, to be in them and to be feeding on them. And that's whenever they're about 2 months old. So you plant them in April, May. Whenever July hits, they've got this fresh, tender green leaves on top. They will eat the shit out of those fresh, tender green leaves. Like when you see deer in bean fields in the summer and early fall, that's what they're eating. They're not eating the actual bean or the pod. They're eating those fresh green leaves on top. Now, once that bean matures and that stalk matures, the leaves all fall off, and the only thing that's left is those pods. Now, what they're after, especially late season, because it's such a good source of protein, is they're after the actual beans that's in those pods because they're hard. But all summer long, those pods, you know, the actual pod itself is full of, you know, 2, 3, 4 beans. They're not really eating those. They're eating the leaves. So that's why beans are my favorite, because they provide two different food sources on the same stalk, basically, at two different times of the year.
Right, that makes sense. Interesting.
I didn't know that. I always see, like, you know, when they're in velvet picks and you can see they're clearly in a bean field. I didn't know what they were doing in there, but I didn't know. So when they eat that those leaves off, that doesn't kill the plant, though, does it?
No. I mean, it's not helping the plant grow bigger beans in the pod by any means, but, I mean, you know, it's not killing it. But what they'll do is, I mean, it will stunt the growth of that plant to an extent. I mean, it's not, like I said, it's not helping it grow by any means. But, no, I mean, you're not going to kill the plant by doing that. I mean, but, yeah, that's where all your tender green leaves are, is up on top. And, I mean, they love to snip those tops off. I mean, if you walk across a bean field on August 1st, around the edge of the field, you'll see where the tops are all snipped off. It looks like a rabbit's come through that's 4 foot tall and just snipped all the tops off, like a rabbit that'd be in your garden and eat your pepper plants or whatever. I mean, that's exactly what it looks like. Just straight stalks where they've snipped the tops of those leaves all off.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
People are asking you some good questions here, man. Johnson
really
asks, recommendations on where and how to set up in an area that's all scrub and overgrown fields. Is it wise to get in super tight in order to have a chance at capitalizing, or is it better to not risk alerting anything that might be bedded and try to set up on an edge and hope for the best?
Good question. Tough call.
I'll add my theory in. For general rule of thumb, I feel that deer are fringe animals. So edges of anything are always a safe bet if you're scared of alerting anything. That's my two cents.
I'd agree with that. I'm aggressive, but I get aggressive when I need to be aggressive. I don't like to go in guns a-blazing. So something like that, what I would do is I would hunt the fringes and basically set up a stand where you can hunt winds that are good for, you know, obviously not, how am I going to say it? You want to hunt a stand, you almost want to hunt or hang a stand that's going to be basically an observation spot more so than a kill spot. And mainly what you're going to try to do is see how the deer are using that area. Maybe they're bedding in the middle. Maybe they're bedding on the fringe. Maybe they're bedding on the neighbors. They're just working through it. But I would hang some observation cameras and stands just trying to figure out how they use it. And then once you figure that out, you could either dive in deeper or don't dive in at all. But one thing I think a lot of people get caught up on is, you know, big bucks, you know, or I should say mature bucks mainly, they only bed or do certain things for short periods of time. And then the rut comes, or a food source changes, or pressure changes them, or whatever. So my point is that you don't want to be too passive and miss out on your opportunity to move in on a buck and try to kill him, because let's say this overgrown field, there's a buck living in there for the time being, and it's middle of October. You've got about 10 days, maybe 2 weeks, to capitalize on that buck staying right there before he's going to be traveling all over the place trying to find does. So, I mean, it's one of those spots where, you know, I agree the fringes are great and I love fringes and stuff, but once you see what's happening, I mean, you don't want to be afraid to dive in and go for it. I mean, I think a lot of people fail to kill big bucks because they get too nervous to actually make the jump and go in after one. I mean, sometimes you just got to go in and make it happen, but you want to have an educated guess of what's going on before you do it. So
right.
I would say start. I always like to start from the outside and work my way in is what I would tell them to do on that deal. Work from the outside in, and once you see what's going on, don't be afraid to make a game plan though and actually dive in and go after it, because those overgrown spots like that, usually a lot of deer or, you know, mature bucks will like to bed in that stuff because it's out of the way. It's probably going to be thick as hell, great bedding, and he's going to feel safe in there. So, I mean, you know, you're probably going to find a good buck in something like that for sure. I mean, I've got spots like that myself that are every year there's a good buck staying in those spots at some point in September or October. I mean, it's just a given every year.
Okay, this is going to be a fun one then. After answering that, Mark Hurley asked, what is the number one thing you think most hunters fail to do that costs them an older class buck? Besides the obvious, like wind, stand placement, I personally think it's not capitalizing on them in early season when you can get a pattern before the rut.
I would say that's a good one. If I had to list three things off the top of my head, I would say not paying attention to details. And in details, I don't mean wind. I mean, well, I do mean wind and all the obvious stuff, but I mean details like drawing your bow back and your arrow squeaking on your rest. Not having your stand totally level, and when you stand up to flip your seat up, your seat squeaks or your stand squeaks. Little details like that make or break you when the moment of truth comes.
I mean, stealth factor is what that boils down to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got to pay attention to the little details. Watching how you walk in and walk out. I mean, just the small little things that people can overlook. That'd be number one. I'm not going to list them in rank, but that would just be the first one. The second one I would say I've already talked about. Not being aggressive enough and being too passive. I think when a big buck gives you a window and you know he's doing something, you need to be trying to kill him right then and there. Don't sit back and play the, well, I watched him walk by that tree over there two times this week. It's 100 yards away. Maybe tomorrow he'll get here. No. In plain words, fuck that. Get over there to where he was at. You watched him do it once or twice. He may only do that one more time, and he might be off on another farm and never come back, or the neighbor shoots him, he gets on a hot doe. I mean, who knows what happens? The farmer down the street cuts a cornfield, now he's over there. I mean, capitalize on when your window is. And then last but not least, I would have to say, in my opinion, one thing I see a lot of guys do, and I hate to say it, but they just flat out give up. I mean, killing big deer, especially with a bow, it's not easy. I mean, if it was easy, everybody would do it every year. So, I mean, you know, you've got to have the mindset that, like, if you want to kill big deer and you want to talk that game, you got to show up and do it. I mean, you might have to hunt 90 days to freaking get it done. I mean, or you might be like me and kill your biggest buck on the opening night of season. But then last year, I hunted like 97 days till I killed my buck. So, I mean, it's just, if you want to kill big deer, I mean, you've got to be able to put in that time, and you can't have the give up factor.
Right. For sure.
And I see a lot of guys do that. I see a lot of guys go, ah, man, I've hunted 3 weeks in October. I hunted in November. Now it's December. Man, I'm just burnt out. I'm just, you know what? I'm going to watch a football game instead. But then, come the last week of season, they're scrambling because they still got a buck tag. And I'm like, well, what were you doing the last 2 months? Like, basically, you just gave up. So, you know, and I mean, I hate to see that, but a lot of people do that. You know, that they say they want to kill a big buck, but it's not easy, man. I mean, you guys all know that. I mean, it's not easy. It's, you know,
I got a question for you, Clint, because you're a guy that is opinionated, and you'll say what you think. And this is something that me and Cameron have been talking about the last. And it's something I've talked about before on the podcast. More in the time of the season when this topic gets a rise. You see other podcasts, you see other blogs, you see a lot of people that so. And I'm doing the air fingers like Dr. Evil experts. You know, they say that like certain things. Like, I just want to know your opinion. Like, the October lull is bullshit. You just don't know how to hunt deer in October. Or the bold ass statements like, this is how you kill a deer in the next 15 uh-huh. days. And then you're like, okay, motherfucker, well, you better kill a deer in the next 15 days if you're telling me how to do it. What's your opinion on the October lull when someone says it doesn't exist, and if you think it exists, you just don't know how to hunt deer in October? And what do you think about the guys that are making those, like, because you're a writer, so this is your wheelhouse. When guys write a blog like, this is how you kill a buck in the next 15 days, and then that person doesn't kill a buck in the next 15 days, it seems like bullshit, you know?
October lull, in my opinion, and I'd stand on top of a building and shout this to anybody. I'd verbally fight anybody on this. October lull, bullshit. Total bullshit.
I got an argument. You want me to go first on my argument? So say I'm a guy that hunts 30 acres, and mid-October, all those deer are moved off my farm because they're doing something different. I'm experiencing an October lull. That would be correct, right? Because deer do different things mid-October, obviously. Like, the juries recognize it, all that. So if I'm hunting 30 acres and deer are doing something different that time of year, and I'm like, I'm not seeing shit, there's an October lull. That guy's experiencing what you would call an October lull because this property doesn't hold the deer during that time of year. So that's my argument against the guys that say it's bullshit and you don't know how to hunt them in October, is because if you have the ground where you can move and adjust, you can get on deer. But if you hunt 30 acres, it depends on your property whether or not you experience an October lull. So to say that the whole thing is bullshit is a very broad statement. I feel like it's incorrect.
Well, I feel like it's not a... Here's what I think is bullshit. I think the phrase October lull is a lazy term for I don't want to go find deer, or I just don't have deer on my property right now.
I can agree with that for sure.
Yep, you're correct. If you've got 30 acres, and let's say there was standing corn all around you, and the neighbor cut it all September 30th for silage, put it in his silo, for the next 2 weeks, there'll be a ton of deer in those fields close to where you hunt trying to scavenge and pick up corn. But the minute those crops are gone, if you don't have acorns or you don't have something else bringing deer into where you're at and you've only got that 30 acres, absolutely, you're going to see a huge shift in deer numbers and deer sightings. I agree with that 110%. What I don't agree with is I don't agree with guys that say, I'm not going to hunt because it's the October lull and deer don't move during the October lull.
I don't agree with that either, because I'm hunting no matter what I'm seeing.
Yep. But now
that goes back to that factor what we talked about earlier, is any minute that buck could step out of wherever at, you know. So I always have that mindset that that's what keeps me going.
The thing is with October is, here's your keys to October. Keys to October are simple, but people lose focus on these keys because you've got to keep up with what the deer are doing. Number one is food. In October, you got beans coming off, you got corn coming off, you've got apples that can be dropping, you've got persimmon that can be dropping, you've got crab apples that are still ripe, you've got fucking guys that have planted winter wheat early that's starting to come up that could be an inch tall. You've got clover still green. You've got acorns falling. Dude, there are 20 different freaking food sources out there for a buck to decide to feed on. So,
deer are moving around from food source to food source.
Oh, dude, deer are moving around. And if you're not staying up to date with what's the best food source around you or close by, you're not going to be into great deer numbers. Now, the other thing is, when October hits, your bucks are starting to think about the rut. Starting to move a little bit. You got to factor that in too. I mean, these bucks are starting to build testosterone out the ass. So they're moving around a little more. They're starting to test one another.
Trying to get swole for that punene.
Oh, absolutely.
They're eye pumping.
Trying to get their eye pumping. They're eye pumping like motherfuckers, right? Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, give me your bar analogy, Clint. Everyone loved that shit last time. The bar analogy. Give the deer versus human bar analogy.
This is classic.
Well, and I've always looked at it like this. I mean, when you're in October, it would be like a guy that's got an old lady in, say, August. And they go out to a bar, and while he's at the bar, he's looking around, and he's like, oh, wow, look, you know, there's lots of good-looking girls here. I'm not saying that he's sexually trying to undress them with his eyes, but he just notices that there's lots of girls there. Okay, flash forward to November 1st. She breaks up with him. She says, you're a piece of shit. I'm done. Okay, guess what? In his head, the switch will flip that goes, well, I'm single now. So I need to go out and try to find women, girls, does, pussy, whatever you want to call it.
Punene.
Where do you think he's going to go? Or he's going to relate back to, hey, I remember that one bar that I was at. Now, I'm not saying, like I said, he was there checking out those girls while he was with his old lady, but I'm just saying that he probably noticed there was lots of girls there.
Punene.
Same thing with the deer. I mean, these bucks in October don't think they're not paying attention to where all the does are at and what all the does are doing, because they know in about 3 weeks they're going to be chasing ants around. So, yeah. I mean, you know.
It's true, man. It's a great analogy. That's my favorite, man.
Preach it.
The first time you said that and you would use the term they're eye pumping, that was like a trend / inside joke with our show for a good 6 months, I feel like.
Yeah,
God, and then what happened next? Blended Bloody Marys? Good
yeah,
Lord, what the hell?
I hit it with the gay jokes, boys.
Well, and to touch it, like, you mentioned the Drurys, and don't get me wrong, I know Mark and Terry quite well between shows, and I've actually hunted some farms I've actually hunted right up against farms in Illinois that literally butt up to Mark and Terry's. Great guys, good people, but here's something I'm gonna throw this out there too. Everybody that watches their shows and everybody that reads their books, reads their articles, and wants to use their tactics, this is one thing I'm gonna tell everyone to keep in mind. What Mark and Terry preach, what Lydia and Tiffany preach, what the Kiskies preach, they are using these tactics on thousands of acres of highly managed, low, low pressured properties. We are not hunting that. As working class bow hunters, like all of us are, how many of us have 20,000 acres in Iowa? How many of us have 8,000 acres in Illinois?
I don't discuss my property.
Well, okay, you might be, you know, there's always one asshole in the crowd. It'd be you.
You're a dickbag. That's why everyone hates you, Steve.
But
shut your fucking mouth.
The point I'm making is everybody eats up the tips and tactics that these guys say. And by no means am I saying that they don't work, because the proof's in the pudding. The stuff that they do, it works. But it works on their properties, their farms. I personally cannot go do what they do on some of my farms that are 100 acres, 120 acres, when their farms in Missouri and Iowa are 2,000 and 3,000 acres.
Right.
It's a totally different mindset for me as a hunter.
Yeah, like basics are basics at that point, but just not everything applies the same across the board.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you know, like prime example, they will tell you there's certain sanctuaries on this farm that we will not ever go into. We don't shed hunt it. We only go into it and track if we have to track a deer. Now, I hear people all the time, they will ask me, how many sanctuaries do you have on your farms? And I'm like, okay, by sanctuary, what do you mean? Do you mean bedding area? No. I mean areas that you will never go into ever. My response, zero. None. I don't have any farms big enough, going off 100 acres, and literally never hunt that, because I'm not saying that there's not spots that I rarely hunt or I save for a certain week of the year or something like that, but there is no such thing as a sanctuary for a guy like me, because
right.
I don't have farms You know, and that's just what I mean, is I'm not saying don't look at their tactics and not take something away from it, because they're all very, 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 you know, world-renowned deer hunters, and they all know what they're doing.
It's all correct. It might just not apply to you.
Yeah, it's a very different type of style and tactics that's going to work for them, that for the average dude who's only got 200 acres to hunt, you can't section off 80 acres of that and say, that's a sanctuary, I'm not going to hunt it. You're crazy to do that.
Right.
You're
nuts. It's not wise to.
I mean, you know.
No doubt.
But yeah, I'm just throwing that out there, because I feel like a lot of people, they want to do what these guys are doing, but you don't have the deer or the resources or the amount of ground to actually put forth these tactics to use and to work. I mean, right. You know, so. But, you know, not saying that they're wrong, because they're right, but they're right on their ground and on their properties. That's not going to be right for my 70-acre piece of ground I'm looking at right now, but behind my parents' farm, that's one of my best pieces of rut property that I've got. It's a 70-acre parcel. 70 acres. You're not putting sanctuary on that 70 acres and saying, nope. Not stepping foot in that the whole year. Right. I'm going to leave half of that 78. You know, you just can't do stuff. I mean, I would basically be cutting myself out of one of my best properties by doing that. You know what I mean? But
no, yeah. I mean, it makes complete sense, because I'm on the same, you know, the same page as you. There was a property I grew up hunting that we tried not to step in a certain area, but it wasn't like a 50-acre piece that we didn't go in. It was much smaller than that, but that's because we knew it was a good bedding.
And you know, I'm a huge believer in stay the hell out of the bedding areas until you absolutely have to go dive in them, or you need to go in them. Like, oh, by all means, like I'm a firm believer in that. But like this 70-acre piece I'm talking about, it's a fantastic bedding area. In the rut, if you can get in there on the right wind, you will see bucks all day long going in and out of there, checking to see if those does are in estrus, because there's a bunch of does that stay in there. Right. Now, if you don't hunt that, because that's your quote-unquote sanctuary, you're taking away so many opportunities to kill a nice buck in the area, because that is a hot spot that holds deer. I mean, you know, so it's just, you've got to be able to look at what they do and look at what you've got and be like, okay, I see what they're saying, but some of this stuff is not going to apply to me. It's just not fathomable to do it.
Right.
Which is, you know.
Makes sense.
But.
Let's get on to the next question. Tony Smith, the fucking man.
That guy's the fucking man.
So I'd love to hear his thoughts on access, especially properties with limited options and or tricky winds. Maybe also his preference in hunting styles at each stage of the season, early, rut, late, et cetera.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. Tricky winds, small properties, hard to access. I've got a couple of those. Actually, probably the two hardest farms I have to hunt, bow hunt, are two of my better farms, but they're very, very tricky because of the wind. I'm going to use the term killable winds or quarterly winds, like the quarter of the wind. I write about this a lot, I talk about it a lot, but basically what I'm doing on these properties is I figure out the best wind for the deer, which winds the deer like to use. And then from there, I'm going to probably have to push the envelope a little bit. So I probably will never have a perfect wind, but I will pick out a day, like let's say a big front's coming in or coming out, the barometer's rising or falling, the pressure's, you know, going up or going down, you know, days where there's a high probability of early deer movement. You know, I mean, everyone knows I'm a big moon guy, so I follow that. You know, maybe the, you know, it's after the full moon and you've got that red moon effect going on. I'll go in and you're pretty much going to have to cheat the wind and kind of push the envelope a little bit and rely on your scent control and rely on, you know, dressing in the field, not smoking a cigarette into your stand, that kind of stuff. Your entry and access, probably a spot like that, you're not going to be able to dive super deep. So your fringes or pinch points and bottlenecks that are kind of on the outskirts of the property, maybe leading to a neighbor's or something, that's kind of the style of ambush spots I'm going to be looking for, especially if it's a smaller property. You know, entry and exit's everything. I mean, you cannot get busted by 10 deer going in or coming out, or you're pretty much cut your throat every single time you hunt. So that's definitely something that you're going to have to kind of really, really watch. Even starting in the summer, do some glassing and just see how the deer are using that property. Trail cams can play a huge factor into that too, by trying to figure out what times of the day the deer are in daylight, and then trying to figure out where they're bedding based on that. But I mean, yeah, it sounds like, it's a lot of work to hunt those farms. Like I said, two of my best farms are tough. I mean, they are tough farms to hunt, but when I hunt them right, and over the years I've figured out how to hunt them the best possible way I can, and I mean, they've paid off. I mean, I've shot some fantastic bucks. I've seen some fantastic bucks, and I mean, it takes time. I mean, there's no quick process to that scenario, but you've got to just slowly piece the puzzle together. That's the best advice I can give you. Start from the outside and just slowly piece it together. You know, don't try to win the whole game on one throw, basically.
For sure. God damn, you're full of knowledge, man. You are. People ask you the loaded questions because they know the type of answers they're going to get. I love it. So this is going to be a very loaded question here, and figured we'll ask. Ryan Fair blessed us with this question, and he asked if you recommend trophy tape.
What the hell's trophy tape?
Well, I mean, we went through this, and we're going to make it short and sweet. I mean, there's bad blood here between trophy tape and working class bow hunter. mainly, it's mainly Kurt being jealous, but I kind of come up with this trophy tape deal myself.
You're right.
Long story short, I've made millions off of it, and yep. I sold it. And you know, it was one of those things that I wanted Kurt to go in with me on it, but he was too, you know, he was off doing his own deal, riding fucking BMX bikes and doing that weird shit, and he just. You know, he just didn't think it was cool, and then next thing you know, I'm making millions off of it. Now he's pissed, and he's a trophy tape hater. He's a hashtag trophy tape hater, but it's okay. I've forgiven him. We've moved forward. We've moved past it.
He's right.
We joke about it now. It is what it is.
Yep. Let's move past this because I'm getting irritated. Okay. Walter Lee, old Redbeard himself, asks, why did it take so long to come back on the show?
I mean, I'm expensive. I mean, I make these guys pay me in beer, and I mean, we're not talking one or two cases. I mean, if you want me on these shows,
pallets.
I mean,
yeah,
they're shipping me absolutely. You beat me to it. They're shipping me pallets of beer.
It's tough.
But no, all jokes aside, we've been trying to get stuff lined up. Man, I'm always super busy. These guys are always busting ass, super busy. And I mean, we talk. I mean, on the weekly, me and Kurt, you know, try to talk a couple times a week, and we're always communicating, but. Our schedules and stuff, I mean, they just haven't lined up, and it's just, you know we went too long. I've been chomping at the bit to get on, and I promise we won't go this long again. But, I mean, really no reason. Just everyone's been busy, man. Just been trying to get it put together, and luckily today was the lucky day. Episode, 225, is that right?
Yeah, 225.
Damn. No, yep. I mean, that's exactly it, man. Our podcast schedule, I was trying not to do this. And I try not to make them months in advance, but we have such a pending list of people we want to get on and you know, stuff like that. It's a business at the same time, and we have fun talking to everyone. But, man, when you schedule them out the way we do it, and since we don't do this for a living, we can't do three in a day. If we could do three in a day, we could get them all done in 3 weeks, and we'd be done with it. But, man, it just gets tough, and we got projects in the works and all sorts of shit. I got so many irons in the fire right now, man. I could barely get this podcast started because I couldn't think straight. So,
I'm with you, man. I'm writing for four or five different people and doing the blog work. And
I got to get your latest blog up, and that's where I'm at, the Camel Collar blog. That's got to – hopefully this week I'll be able to fire that off, so –
Heck yeah, man. It's a good one. Talk all about shooting and summertime stuff and some tips and tactics. Yeah, it's a good one, man. I think people will like it. Looking forward to getting it up.
Yeah, we'll get that out. I've been slacking. We had the shoot a couple weekends ago, so that threw a stick in our spokes, and we're just trying to get back on our feet here and hustle through what we got. And, you know, have a good time doing it, man. Clint, you know, you're always welcome back, and we'll get you in as quick as we can. I'm going to try and – the goal from here on is, you know, of course, being busy is a good thing for the podcast. Like, we have schedules we want to meet, people we want to get on, things we're trying to do. I'll give a little sneak peek. We're planning on, if everything works out with all our work, because we work for a living, we're going to try and do a podcast tour starting next trade show season and do a thing there. That's all in the works. So if once all the trade, I'm talking after bow season, if you guys are wanting to podcast with us, if you're out and about at any trade shows like Classics, ATA, any sort of that, like we're going to be jumping around bow shop to bow shop maybe. Mostly Midwest. We might get out to some more Eastern, maybe more Western states. We're going to try and do a podcast tour. We don't know how it's going to work, but we're going to figure something out. So if you're wanting to do a podcast, we're going to do some scheduled, but we're also going to do some flybys. So it's like if you come out, hop on one type of deal.
Hell
but
yeah.
That's in the works right now. That is one project we're working on. That's kind of a mini announcement. That's months away yet, so we still got to figure that all out. One thing I want to talk about before I forget, Steve's been reminding me for the last half hour.
Well, I thought we were going to do it earlier. So
I wanted to do it at the beginning of the show, but we forgot. Get on our Facebook or the Whitetail Experience Facebook. We are doing a giveaway starting tonight. It's going to go into the first or second week of July. We are doing Elite Bow Giveaway.
Boom.
An Energy 32 bow giveaway. There's... I'll just explain the story. We had our shoot. The Bone Shed was very nice and gave us a bow to give away at the shoot. Well, David Ebright from the Whitetail Experience had won it, and he decided that he would donate it back, and we'd do a social media giveaway. So this is a collab between us, the Whitetail Experience, and the Bone Shed. So you're going to have to go on there, like all our pages, obviously, share it up, and tag a couple of friends. It's a pretty simple task to do for a chance to win a $1,000 bow. This bow's coming from the Bone Shed. It's an all-black E32, Elite E32. So go on there, follow all of us, share it up, tag, just help us out and do that. We're going to give this bow away. Hopefully it's someone that really appreciates it and deserves it. But this, by the time this episode is up, that giveaway should be going. It actually is probably up already right now as I look at the time. So get on there, check it out, go to all those social media, share it from each one. I mean, we're going to randomly draw a winner. So, check
Hell
that
yeah,
out.
That's sweet.
Am I missing anything else? Nah, I think we're good. No. Clint, you got anything you want to add, man?
Man, we covered a lot there. That's a good one. A lot of good info. Good laughs as always. Probably a handful of cuss words, maybe two or three I heard, but that's pretty typical for us. Maybe 30, I don't know.
Maybe 30. Yeah. We ain't beeping them out.
But, no, man, we covered a lot. Is there a last question, or is there another? Is there anything else that someone threw out that's totally different that we got to cover? I scrolled through a bunch of them today, and man, was there some awesome questions, some great feedback. I appreciate all the everybody asking.
A lot of stuff we already kind of covered. There's some kind of like sort of repeat. Casey Gamble 50 on Instagram. I love listening to this dude. People enjoy you, man.
I appreciate that.
You got a lot to say, man.
There was one goofy one. I don't know if I was on Facebook. I scrolled through it and I saw.
Did I miss one?
No, dude, it was goofy. Oh, wait. I think that's right there.
Oh.
No, go up.
I missed some of these. How did this happen?
That's the one that was goofy.
What, this one right here?
Yeah.
Oh, Scott Clark, what does this workout regiment look like? Is it focused on bow hunting or cougar hunting?
That's a good one. Man, real quick, I'd love to say I'm in the gym 5-6 nights a week, but just with kids and schedules, man, honestly, I try to run. I got like a 2.5 mile loop. I try to run 4, 5, 6 nights a week if I can.
How heavy is the rock you carry with you, though?
No rock. No rock. I'm actually carrying a 30 pack, and my goal is to have it all the way done by the time I get around that 2.5 mile loop.
You're breaking even on calories at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But no, I try to run. I use the treadmill a lot, and I try to do like 2 to 3 rounds of push ups a day, like just crank 50 out. I mean, honestly, like I said, I love to work out. I mean, I like going to the gym. I think it's relaxing, but with my schedule and everything, man, I just don't have an hour and a half usually to do that a day. So a lot of times it's just running and push-ups, and I really just try to watch what I eat and stuff. I mean, I try to stay in the best shape I can be for freaking bow hunts and stuff, and I mean especially the out west stuff, just because they're so, you know, there's so much involved with them. But no, I mean, I wouldn't say nothing super crazy, man. I just try to watch what I eat, you know, and run, and I do a lot of push-ups and stuff, and some sit-ups and whatnot, and just try to more like full body workout stuff, really, than anything. I mean, I in my opinion, I think running, although I hate running, I think it's one of the best things you can actually do. Like, if you only do one thing workout-wise, like, I feel like running, you know, stretching before, stretching after, and just straight flat-out running and jogging is about as good as you can do.
What about the Cougars, though?
Well, I mean, I can't really, you know, I can't talk about that too much. With Danielle being pregnant and whatnot, I mean, I just don't want to, you know, I don't want to upset the bear. But, no, that is a good one, though. Now back in my younger days, I mean, it was all about the curls for girls and the chest to impress, my friends. I mean, that's what it was all about. I mean, you know, it was, the hell with leg day. I'll just wear jeans. Let's make sure my arms are gigantic.
Well, shit, man. We covered a lot. I appreciate the hell out of you, as always. Anything you want to say to the people before we shut her down?
No, man. I mean, keep checking out that podcast. I know that you guys got a bunch of good guests coming up, as always. The blog, we got some great blogs coming up. I know that the newest one here should be up in the next week or so. I'm going to stay on Kurt's ass till he gets it up.
It'll happen. It'll happen.
Whether he likes it or not, or I'm going to start fucking hitting him with trophy tape. But
Mailing me trophy tape just to piss me off.
Keep shooting those freaking bows. And, as always, chase your dreams, not your liquor. And it's been a pleasure being on. I appreciate all the feedback and all the support from everybody out there. I got a pretty badass article coming out in Deer and Deer Hunting this next month, Deer and Deer Hunting Magazine. Got a couple in Peterson's Bow Hunting coming up, so check those out. I always appreciate the feedback. Let me know what you think, what you like, what you don't. And, that's about it. Just pumped to be back on. It's been a while. I'm already looking forward to the next one, fellas. Always a good time.
Hey, next one you got to be in studio.
Absolutely. That's a must. Absolutely. 100% agreed on that one.
Steve, you got anything to add?
I've got absolutely nothing to add. This is a great podcast.
So Clint, you did have something to add.
Well, I'm just saying. I've got nothing more to add, but I want to say thank you to Clint.
Okay.
So, Cameron? That's all I got.
No, I'm doing pretty good waiting for my Elite so I can be part of the club.
Yeah. Cameron just ordered a tempo.
He did.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
All right.
There you go.
Everyone, thanks for tuning in this week. Double podcast week. We got one coming out here in a couple days on Thursday night. Or for your Friday workday morning. But in the meantime, you know what to do. Go shoot your bow. We love you.